Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman, founder of the Dementia Whisperers Incorporated. Laura Wayman, nationally recognized expert on dementia and author of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care, published by Johns Hopkins University Press, joins you and 16 million caregivers with real answers and help, with love, wisdom, and compassion for your personal questions and concerns on the dementia journey. Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Call in at 929-477-1393. That's 929-477-1393. And now, live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Are you caring for a loved one, a resident or client who's presenting dementia symptoms and challenging behaviors? Our vision is to open up discussion in order to greatly improve quality of care and excellence in service to individuals with Alzheimer's disease or any dementia and related illnesses, and to lend a reassuring hand to their caregivers and families. This is an interactive call-in show. We want to hear from our listeners. This is co-host Scott Cluthy, and I remind you our call-in line. And our first two callers today, live to the show with Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer, receives an autographed copy of her incredible book, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care, and Johns Hopkins University Press, and her new book's coming out. We'll be talking about that during this hour as well. But I remind you of our call-in line, 929-477-1393. We'd love to hear from you. And now it's time, dear audience, for the Dementia Whisperer. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Scott. It sure is good to hear your voice, as always. And how are things there in the wonderful state of Texas? How are you doing?
Well, Houston is about double its size right now because we have the Super Bowl here this weekend.
Oh, that's right.
So traffic is just wonderful, you can imagine. And there's a lot of people here going all different directions.
Yeah,
so
that's for sure.
So it's pretty exciting, though. It's wonderful for Houston to be hosting the Super Bowl. Myself,
wow.
Personally, I've been dealing with some health and wellness issues, and it's interesting. I turned 60. Should I say this? I turned 65 in less than 2 weeks. So welcome. I'm welcoming myself to my definite 65 speed limit, top out Texas freeway speed limits now. So that's a whole journey. I have my Medicare card, and I am also cognizantly aware of how health and wellness, in all this work I've done over decades, as you know, with everything from Wisdom Radio to Lyme Healthy Living Radio and working with Dr. Andrew Weil and all these people, it still only comes home when we have a personal intersection of our health and wellness. And I've been having that, dealing with a rash. And so the truth is, I've been getting back to really digging deeply into natural and organic approaches to health and wellness. And I see that curvature in the high cost of health care and the challenges of elder care in approaches that can work and not break the bank. Because we know that financial pressure and financial ability are two of the things that determine the quality of life and the quality of care for those suffering with Alzheimer's or any form of dementia. And so using apple cider vinegar has incredibly transformed this terrible situation I had that's been going on for months in the last 20 minutes. I'm not kidding, and you know I'm not, because we talked about
it. I'm so glad.
But it points the way that there are answers. There are solutions, body, mind, and spirit. There are solutions we can do. And thank goodness that I had the career of interacting with these things to not even doubt it once I found it on the internet, looked up the information, went to a natural health site, and said, my gosh, that's exactly what I have. I'm going to run down the store, and an hour later, I'm not suffering instead of waiting for a doctor's appointment next week. I think people need to empower themselves to start to find the answers to their health and wellness, and especially around those issues of nutrition, health, and wellness that can and do affect, even if it's anecdotal evidence, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, to help us maintain our memory, maintain our body function, maybe not regain, quote-unquote, as we say, dementia is a one-way river, you know, and we get on the journey, but perhaps persist and with some maintenance and maintaining for health and vitality so that our body can function properly to help our mental capacity be the best it can be, regardless of where we are on the journey. So that's what I'm sharing.
Absolutely, Scott. And, you know, I do like it when we talk about this because we need to share all of this information with our listeners, and we all need to understand that it's very important from our earliest knowledge when we're much younger, how important it is for us to take care of our bodies and our brain, because when we get to our age, Scott, and we both are in our 60s, so when we get there, we are going to definitely... I need the younger callers to understand you definitely will reap the rewards if you take care of yourself now rather than having to play catch up and clean up the mess of not doing that with nutrition and exercise. And that's really all we have when it comes to taking care of any kind of, and we don't have a prevention for many of the causes that we're talking about today of dementia, but we can at least slow down the process of loss of normal brain function if we have more healthy normal brain function. So it's really important that we do listen when someone like you is talking about your experience or myself or others that have that wellness consciousness, and that we continue with that from the time we're young until, you know, when we're very, very old, so that we can keep ourselves,
Laura,
as well as possible.
It's so obvious. If people would stop placating their desire for what I want now when I want it, and something about taste and that's been created, or sensation or experience that's been created by a company specifically to get you to do something. In other words, to come in and eat something every week, to go and do something every week, to be some way every day even. If we can stop this automatic dependence on what we assume are people who have our best interests, they have your best interests as long as you're a consumer.
Right.
As long as you can maintain putting money into the coffers. I'm sorry, but at the corporate level, too often, that is not what's driving it. It's only about how can we package this. How can we make it faster? How can we make it so you don't even have to think about cooking? You don't have to think about putting fresh food into your body. You don't have to think about what you're drinking. You don't have to think about what you're wearing. You don't have to think about where you're living. You just do it because it's easy, and somebody else will handle it for you. And that's what's happened. We've lost control of taking personal responsibility, and it adds up. And after 20 years, after 5 years of eating that kind of diet, you're not going to feel so good. But after 20 years, the problem is every cell in your body has been replaced by another cell at least twice over, and that cell is not based on the basic fundamentals of life. You're just functioning. And so the decay can happen faster. And if you think about it, Laura, if your heart can suffer, you know, if your skin can suffer from not taking care of it for years, your brain can suffer too. Those are also cells. Your vine, your nerves cannot shoot off because they decay. The immune system cannot support you.
That's right. And we need to transform the aging experience, the total aging experience, with the idea in mind that we are going to make sure our brains are healthy to withstand any of these causes and slow any kind of loss down, because once you have that cause in your brain, like Alzheimer's, there's no preventing it, curing it, or stopping it. There's just the idea that we can only manage it, and we need to learn to put the work in early, for sure. I certainly wish I would have known this when I was younger, so that I could have done an even better job of making sure that my brain and my heart and my body we're ready for the onslaught of that aging that we experience. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today, because we're going to transform the aging experience through a wonderful organization, it's actually an independent and assisted living place called Eskaton Granite Bay. And our guest is going to help us talk about that. But our guest is also going to talk a little bit from a personal level. I think this is going to be so interesting for not just the professionals that listen to us on a regular basis, but also for the caregivers, the families that are listening and want to hear this very personal story, a very interesting account of a dementia journey from the perspective of not just a family member, but also a professional who works in this industry. And this our guest today is a very dear friend of mine, and she is a wonderful spokesperson, a champion for the Dementia Whisperer, and I've worked with her and spent personal time with her. So I'm really, really anxious to share. I think she's waiting on the other line for us. And,
Without further ado, then, in fact, you should do the honors, Laura, with our guest today. It's Pamela Dallas, and we want to say hello and welcome to the Dementia Whisperer. Hello, Pamela.
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me to join you today.
Oh, we are thrilled, Pamela. And like I said, Pamela is a very dear friend. She's the ultimate example of a wonderful professional. She has made the difference and helped many families on their journey with the aging experience and with dementia. And so, Pamela, thank you so much. You have done me such a favor to come today. And if you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about yourself professionally, and let us know a little bit about your journey. I just really want to turn this over to you, because you have such wonderful information to share with our listeners.
Well, thank you, Laura. First of all, I want to thank you for all that you do for families worldwide who are on this journey, and just the fact that you have dedicated your life to helping people dealing with all of the dementia diseases is remarkable, and you just help so many people, and you certainly helped me. I sometimes think, you know, I didn't start out in this industry, and I've worked with Eskaton, a wonderful nonprofit organization based in Carmichael, California, which is in the greater Sacramento area of California. I've been fortunate enough to be with this company for about 8.5 years now, and I sometimes think that the reason I was directed this way was because of what I would end up dealing with my mother. And thanks to Eskaton and the wonderful training that they give, and meeting you, Laura, and gosh, you've gone on this journey with me. it was something that, you know, I think every family who is faced with this, you know, it comes as a shock. I think all of us think, well, you know, I'm so surprised that this is now part of my life, because there's not enough information out there. You know, there's lots of resources for cancer, as there should be, lots of resources for heart disease and diabetes, as there should be, but it's very difficult. It's sort of, you know, it's sort of the secret that nobody knows anything about, and then when you're face-to-face with it, it just comes as such a surprise, and then you're fumbling as to, well, where do I go for resources? So thank you for all that you do, for your book and the new one that's coming out, and all the consulting that you do and the seminars. It's just so wonderful to have someone to turn to and say, okay, what now? What should I expect now? In my professional life, I just see families just at their wits' end, just looking around saying, oh my gosh, now what do we do? And for those of us, you know, everybody needs to be dementia aware, everybody, because we're going to encounter this more and more in our lives. Our neighbors are going to be touched by it, our coworkers. people that we interact with on a daily basis, whether in an organization that we belong to, our church, it doesn't matter. We're just going to encounter this more and more all the time. And so I think the more we're aware, the better for all of us. And certainly I did work at a community that had memory care, and I now am at a community that is independent and assisted. But I am dealing still with seniors, thank goodness. And any time that you are working with seniors, you're going to encounter dementia. You're going to be right on that journey with them. So I've been fortunate that my career ended up helping me in my personal life, and then through that I met you, Laura. And so it's been quite a journey. And for me, I lived out of state, so I didn't see my mother on a daily basis. And so, you know, when I noticed the changes, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, and like everybody else at first, I was like, oh, well, that's not a big deal. You know, she's getting older, she's just forgetting a few things. And like so many others, I mean, my mother and I were always incredibly close, and I can remember the first day she said to me, when did you become a nosy busybody? And I thought, oh, you know, I am trying to manage your life because I don't think you're safe. And so, you know, we took lots of twists and turns. And it was sometimes a roller coaster ride. And you know, and sometimes, you know, she would almost help. So, you know, one of the valuable lessons I've learned from you, Laura, is that, you know, if you know one person with dementia, you know one person with dementia. While there are so many commonalities, everybody is different. And some people are aware, and they can sort of work with you to help, and some are not aware. And my goodness, their defense mechanism will rear up, and they'll just fight you every step of the way.
So, absolutely. And Pamela, you know, you're talking about how difficult it was, and yet you are more dementia aware than the average person who is dealing with a loved one just because you work in this and you've seen it so often, but yet you're still expressing how challenging it is. And I see this too often because the dementia symptoms start a lot earlier than we even recognize it. And when we're the more dementia aware we are, the earlier we can start developing a personalized care plan for that person. But it takes that dementia awareness for us to recognize that this could possibly and probably is will get very much more severe, and that it's not really like we want to put it off in our denial at first, that it's not a big deal, like you were just talking about. And yet, when you go along this journey, you recognize, gosh, I wish I would have been a little more dementia aware earlier so that I could be more prepared and understand that it's progressive and it's just going to get worse. Most causes of dementia symptoms, we can't stop it, fix it, or change it. We have to learn to manage it. But everybody's different. They might not have worse symptoms from the time we first start to see them, anywhere from 2 to 20 years down the road. And like you said, there was quite a bit of time when you started to see a little bit of changes in your mom, but it took a long time before you saw that it was going to get worse, that there was nothing you could do to stop it. So it's amazing, you know, and you and I have talked about this, it's amazing how much this is swept under the carpet and how often it goes so far before families actually recognize that they need to ask for help. So today I'm hoping that our listeners can hear that even us in the industry struggle with this. When do we ask for help? When do we know it's going to get worse? And I always want to say, probably it is, and it's probably going to get worse sooner rather than later. So, you know, Pamela, you have some wonderful stories about how you manage some of these things that were going on with your mom, even though it was long distance. I love to hear you talk about it because you have that wonderful perception And that little twinkle and humor, twinkle in your eye and a little humor sometimes at some of the darling things she would say in her dementia. So let's talk a little bit about some of those first signs and symptoms that you saw and how you managed that and how over time they got worse and you saw it more and more.
Well, and you're so right, Laura. The sooner families react, I mean, being proactive in all aspects of our lives is generally always better. And so I think if families reach out, because instinctively I think people want to fall into denial. I mean, that's you know, it feels like such a safe place, and it certainly is not. So the sooner families reach out, and when people, I think one of the most important lessons I learned from you is I love your analogy that the brain is like Swiss cheese when somebody has a dementia disease. And so, you know, when they're in the cheese, things are going great, and then they hit a hole, and you're like, oh, my gosh, what happened? And then they go back into the cheese, and you think, oh, they're better. I have so many families come in, and
yeah.
they say, oh, you know, we don't need to move Mom because she's better today. And you know, one of the most important things you can learn is, no, they're not better. They just hit the cheese again. And
yeah, they just had a little pocket
so
of cheese,
true.
But that cheese is going to
so
be gone,
true.
Too.
It's going to disappear
just
faster
cheese.
Than you think. And so, I, you know, again, I my mother lived in Florida, and I'm in California, and at first I didn't, even being in the industry, I didn't, because it's like so many other things in life. You can do it, you know, you can do it professionally, and then when it hits you personally, you're just not, you're not prepared. And so I noticed little things. Because I would call her a couple of times a week. But I think one of the first things that struck me was I went to visit her, and I tried to go down to visit her two or three times a year, and, of course, a lot can happen in that time period. And I went to visit, and this was going back many years ago, and discovered she lived in South Florida on the Intercoastal Waterway, and there was a notice that her homeowner's insurance had been canceled. And I said, you know what, you can't let your homeowner's insurance be canceled. You need your hurricane insurance. You're right in the path of any hurricane that's going to come along. And she's like, no, I paid that. Well, during my visit, I was looking for some other paperwork, opened her, she had this big, beautiful old secretary desk, and I opened one of the drawers, and I found a whole list of invoices and bills where she very neatly and beautifully wrote out the check, put the check back in the envelope with the invoice, and very carefully filed it away in the secretary desk.
Oh.
And there were all sorts of things
oh.
that happened.
And
wow. so, I mean, that was a shock to me, an absolute shock. And so
she was doing the process, though, Paula. She was doing the process and filing and keeping everything neatly together and writing
yep,
the check.
Was,
no, now that's done, and now we
yep.
and now we can file it, but not
yep.
in
it
that
away.
Continuity yeah. of it needs to get to the mailbox. Just wasn't there.
And,
no,
and you know,
she missed the important step. You're so
yep.
right.
And Pamela, she believed that it was really what was happening. She believed she was doing this normally, and there's, you know, that anosognosia was lifting its ugly head. That anosognosia means they don't know what they don't know, and they believe they are normal. And we cannot change that belief. We have to go and help them manage the fact that they don't know what they don't know.
Absolutely. And another wonderful thing I learned from you, Laura, was to live in her reality. And so, you know, it was not in either of our best interests for me to say, look what you've done. You're no longer capable of handling your financial
mm-hmm.
affairs. You're not paying your bills, because even though it was right there in black and white, and again, I have families
mm-hmm.
come in and they say, well, I took this in and showed it to her so she would know. That doesn't work.
That's a no-no.
He showed it to her and she didn't know what it was, maybe.
And And in that, we're trying to stop it, fix it, or change it, which is in the core of our being. We think we're going to stop it, fix it, or change it,
right.
And it is the opposite
right.
with dementia. And so when you do that, you simply make it worse because they don't believe you. You make them paranoid. They think that you're doing it wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. You don't have it right.
You know, and it's very hard to become your parent's parent. It is not a role that feels natural. It is not a role you're trained for. Your parent, you know, always feels like your parent, no matter how old you are or how old they are. And you, I think, even an adult child, you always, in some regards, feel like you're still the child. And so to take over is not a comfortable position. And so, you know, my mother, along with almost every other parent, whether mother or father, to have your child take over and say, I'm now going to schedule your doctor's appointments. I'm going to arrange transportation. I'm going to have meals delivered. And my mother was a very independent, self-sufficient individual who was like, no, you're not. I can prepare my own meals. I can go, I can go to the store. I can do this. I can do that. And so, you know, early on, we certainly had some battles. It was, you know, because I was lining up in home care and she would refuse to let them in. And she was in a gated community and they'd show up at the gate and she'd tell the gate, you know, I've never heard of this person. They can't come in, you know.
Even though Pamela, she probably agreed to it at the time, then later on they're going, no. First of all, they might not remember. Second of all, they weren't really processing it in a normal way. And so when you said, we're going to have this caregiver that's going to come help you, in the moment she might have said, oh, okay. And then when it happened, that particular processing, that situation, that event was completely gone out of her mind. Plus, she didn't need it. So why in the world would there be somebody there? Because she's perfectly normal. That's how they feel.
Absolutely. She not only didn't need it, she didn't want it. And, as awful as the disease is absolutely traumatic and horrendous. I also I find it fascinating. And there certainly is not really a positive spin, but I find it fascinating. And I oftentimes would realize that while I was placating and living in her reality, she was doing the same with me. It's like, well, I'll just agree with her and then I'll go do what I want to do. So she was aware enough to go along with the flow, and she knew I wasn't there and couldn't do anything. One of the humorous things that happened was before her dementia got real bad, a hurricane did hit and it destroyed her car. So my brother and I didn't want her to drive, even though she was a very good driver and had never had an accident. And we just thought, you know, it was time. You know, this was a good way for her to stop driving. And so she, of course, wanted to get a car, and we were trying to talk her out of it. Well, she got a rental car, and which we were not in favor of, but we were neither one there. So she got this rental car, drove over not too far from where she lived to get her hair done. And she'd been getting her hair done at the same place for, 25 years or so, a long, long time. Well, she left the hair salon and forgot which, she knew she had a rental car, but she didn't know which one it was. And so she was in an area that had free shuttle service for seniors, and the shuttle bus went by, and she recognized the shuttle bus, and she got on the shuttle bus, got herself back home, and then called me to tell me that the rental car was in the parking lot, and could I return it to the rental car agency for her? So, I was like, okay, well, the rental car company will be thrilled at this one. Certainly there were lots of amusing stories. And, you know, which reminds me of when the community I worked in before, there was a family that their mother was one of our residents, and her son would not let any of the grandkids come see her because he said he didn't want them to remember her that way. And I tried to convince him that they could still have quality time together. They could still have quality moments. And I just thought that that was so just very sad and a loss all the way around because, you know, you can still have fun. You can still share things. And certainly my mother and I had some great conversations after her dementia got really quite bad. There were times that she thought that I was her sister. And we moved her to North Carolina where I have a couple of cousins and some friends of hers had retired there and my brother and sister-in-law lived there. And I would call and she, you know, the caregivers would say, and they needed you, Laura. This community needs you desperately. I would call and they would go and tell her that her daughter was on the phone and she would promptly tell them she didn't have a daughter. The phone call must be... So I would try to convince, don't tell her it's her daughter. Just tell her she has a phone call. And
tell her
so,
she has a call.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just, you know, say you've got, you know, families calling. And so, but they just couldn't, you know, they couldn't seem to get that straight. And they'd tell her, you know, your daughter's on the phone. And sometimes I could even hear her in the background saying, oh, that call must be for somebody else. I don't have a daughter.
That is one of those tips that I'm constantly helping caregivers to understand because
yes,
they're losing
are.
The ability to process information. Their memory often is impaired. When they hear something like it's your daughter on the phone, they're not processing that the same way. So our goal is to only give them the information they can handle with a broken thinker. And
they
can
got
handle
a broken
less
thinker,
and less.
Right, Laura? I know that. I tell people that every day.
Yes.
Maybe they have a broken thinker, and they go, "What?" I said, "Think about that."
Yes.
They can't process what you're saying. You have to tell them what's happening.
Yes. And they act like they don't hear it, but they actually hear it. It's, you know, they're physically hearing the sounds and the words, but if you don't
right.
process it, it doesn't mean anything to you. So it's as if you don't hear it. And so they're trying to piece together parts and pieces of what they can process. And so, you know, she still understood when that caregiver came, she still had enough cheese, so to speak, to understand that she could answer the phone, but she couldn't make it make sense because she'd hit a hole that she was supposed to be talking to her daughter because there was a hole in that part of her brain that she even had a daughter. So
wow. On that happy thought, I think we should take a break and think about that. That's going right through my thinker.
Yes.
Talking to someone who you're telling your daughter is on the phone, and they don't even think they have a daughter. And, you know, Pamela and Laura, it's so often that, you know, and we can't help it because we're family, right? It's family. It's as close as it gets. And all that stuff that's resolved and unsaid, said and unsaid, done and not done. And we just... don't, you know, emotionally, it's like never connect that they don't not know you're their daughter. They just don't think they have one. It's not personal.
Right, right.
That's
and that once you get past that point, then Pamela could still, as long as she wasn't arguing about it, she could still be the daughter. She just didn't need to call herself the daughter. And we'll come back and talk about that, how you have to communicate in a very different way to make that meaningful connection.
That's so true. We'll be back with more with Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer, her website, Laura Wayman, and her new book coming out from Johns Hopkins University Press. It's so exciting. The new updated rendition, and it's going to have great, the latest details, the latest information, the latest breakthroughs, and also talking with our wonderful guest today, Pamela Dallas, sales counselor for Eskaton Granite Bay. And how do they find Eskaton on the web, or how do they connect with Granite Bay, Pamela?
Eskaton has a wonderful website, Eskaton, it's Eskaton.org. We are a nonprofit. We have assisted living, independent living, skilled nursing facilities, several memory care, anything to do with seniors. You can find resources on the Eskaton website.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that. And don't forget, listeners, if you'll call in, and people are funny because they're like, oh, I'm going to call in. People are going to know. No, no. You can call in and be somebody else, just like people with dementia. You can call in with a question or comment. I'll get your information off the air, and we'll make sure we get a copy of Laura's wonderful first book, which became a bestseller that shocked Johns Hopkins. It doesn't shock me. And when you hear the depth of a work, how it affected Paul and so many people every week and thousands of people, you can have a free copy of that book, and that can be a life send for you right now. It's a lifeline from Laura Wayman to you, her gift. So give us a call, 929-477-1393. That's the call-in line. This is co-host Scott Cluthy. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. It's great to have you out there live here on Blog Talk Radio with Live with the Dementia Whisperer.
You're listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Call in with your personal questions and concerns on the dementia journey. Call 929-477-1393 and visit Laura Wayman online at laurawayman.com. We'll be right back.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for taking
me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 4 number one albums. 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 7 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks, it's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Call in at 929-477-1393 and visit Laura Wayman online at laurawayman.com. And now, Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer. Welcome back to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. This is co-host Scott Cluthy having my dementia moment. I've got 3 pairs of readers on my desk in front of me. You ever run around a house looking for your readers so you can read what you need to know? I called Pamela Dallas, Paula Dallas, and my apologies. It's Pamela Dallas, sales counselor for Eskaton Granite Bay, and Pamela was sharing her life journey. Laura?
Yes, thank you, Scott. And it's okay. We all make mistakes, and we all love you anyway. So you are the greatest. So a little mistake like that, that's nothing for you. You are the epitome of a wonderful professional, and I am always so proud to be on the air with you. I just am always trying to wear those big shoes of yours to keep up with you. So I am so excited to have Pamela on today, and I hope our listeners are really feeling the passion and the joy and the sorrow and the pain that Pamela has experienced. I want to talk a little bit more about her journey with her mother, because her mother just recently passed away, and Pamela is rather fresh in this grief after a long illness and many years of the dementia just getting worse and worse, like it does. Pamela has been caring for her mother long distance and supporting her other family members who were a little bit closer. But Pamela is also the epitome of a wonderful, wonderful professional who understands dementia, helps other family members. And yet when it is personal, it is so much deeper and so much more challenging and so much more difficult to manage. And even though Pamela is very dementia aware, we're talking today about even the challenges that come when you have the opportunity to raise your dementia awareness. And so, Pamela, you know, we were just talking on the break when we were in the chat room, and we were talking about why it's necessary to ask for help and why communities like yours, professionals like you and I, why it's necessary for those family members to indeed ask for help. And what brought about that discussion in the chat room was the fact that I said you can still be a family member, have that cherished role as if you were the daughter, the spouse, the son, but you can't do it if you're a full-time caregiver. So let's talk a little bit more about that and share what revelations we were having in the chat room.
Oh, absolutely. And I was just sharing, you know, again, one of the wonderful things that I learned from you, and then it was just cemented in my mind from my own personal experience, that even though my mother didn't always recognize that I was her daughter, she always seemed to recognize my voice and have a sense that we were somehow connected. I think she always felt that I was a family member. Sometimes she thought that I was her sister, but always there was a relationship there. And I could tell just from her tone of voice and the way she spoke and the words that she said that she knew that there was a connection. One of the things that I know for sure is you cannot keep two relationships going at the same time. You can't be the daughter and a full-time caregiver. You can't be the spouse and a full-time caregiver. It just, one relationship or both is going to suffer. And I know that a lot of people think that there are not resources out there to help, but they are. And if they reach out, they can certainly get assistance with that. And everybody needs something. In-home care, an assisted living community like ours, or just a friend to come and give them a break. And certainly if they reach out and read your book and check your website, Laura, they're going to get so many tips that will help them through this, because you can't juggle the two. You just absolutely cannot. It's just too big of a load.
And, you know, Pamela, I'm just here thinking at what a wonderful gift, how kind it was for you to allow your mom to not recognize you as a daughter and to simply choose how she could process a relationship with you. Because often family members fight against that. You know, they want to correct mom. Oh, no, mom, I'm your daughter. Yes, you do have a daughter. And all that does is make that person feel bad. And we can't stop it, fix it, or change it by correcting them. It's just so much easier, like we were talking about earlier, to go into their world and give them permission to be where they are in their journey, to meet them there rather than trying to fix it. And didn't you feel often, Pamela, the need to try and fix it and knowing that it was just going to make it worse, I am sure was so helpful for you?
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, I will share that, like many other families, in the very beginning, I felt that, well, first of all, as you said earlier, your natural instinct, what, you know, we as human beings, if we're presented with something that is not correct, we want to make it correct. We want to fix it. And so, if she said something that wasn't the way that, you know, I was seeing it, I wanted to say, oh, no, Mother, you know, this is how it is. You know, no, you've not really paid your bills. They're filed away here. But that lesson of living in her reality is so important. And so many families, and I felt it myself in the very beginning, you know, I felt, well, I can't lie to my mother. I can't I can't tell her an untruth. And I have families come in to me now and they say those very words to me that, well, I can't lie. You know, I don't want to tell her an untruth. And I personally found that once I embraced the idea that I could enter her world, she couldn't enter mine, that it actually became very easy for me. And you can almost make it into a game. And so when I heard her tell the caregivers that, oh, you know, I don't have a daughter, that has to be somebody else's call. And sometimes she would say, well, I haven't been married. I don't have any kids. So she not only forgot me, she forgot my father. And that's hard. Sorry.
That's okay, Pamela. It's okay. I wish I could give you a big hug. And yet,
on the other hand, it's actually quite easy to get into the role of thinking whatever makes her feel safe, whatever makes her feel good, is what I have to do, and I can do it. So
absolutely.
Actually,
and you know, that is a perfect example, and I really want our listeners to hear this, that it is hard because we feel like we're lying to them, but the rationale behind this change and transforming our care approach is that it's the only thing that works because they have a broken thinker. So when we go about trying to give them the truth, which is really, in our reality, is the truth, it's unkind because they can't process it the same, and it goes through this broken thinker and all the rusty gears, and it comes out the other end that they actually believe you're lying to them. And so it's a matter of, yes, you can tell them your truth, and that's a wonderful way to approach an adult who doesn't have dementia, because it's what works. But when that dementia comes around and robs them of that normal brain function, you actually are being cruel and unkind, trying to make them process a truth that they can't, and it scares them. It makes them feel exactly what you just said, Pamela, unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
And so as uncomfortable as that makes us, it's dementia absolutely demands that we change to help them be as safe as possible, knowing that nothing we do is going to stop it, fix it, or change it. And so we have to just simply learn to go with the flow in order to best manage it. It's just, like I said, it's kinder.
Yeah, Laura, but that's the hardest part. That is the crucial key piece, is the letting go and not being in control. It's the feeling of out of control is what we fight our whole lives.
Right.
Feeling out of control when your car skids on ice. You know that feeling?
Yes.
You're right. So that's that feeling, or you know, gravel road, or wherever you might be, or feeling out of control on water skis. That feeling, though, tap down a little and extend it out. And
right.
That denial, that river, and you know, when we don't want to be out of control, we want to have it together. We want to not be the bad daughter, son, husband, uncle, wife, granddaughter. We don't want to be the one who didn't know and didn't see. And then when it comes, and then when it overwhelms us, then the guilt. So that we're fighting an internal battle with ourselves most of the time before we break through to clarity.
Exactly. And the feeling, yeah. Pamela, tell how it felt when you found a way to communicate with your mom that really worked. When you struck that chord and you told her her truth in a little different way, when you packaged it in a way that she could understand, how did it feel when that worked?
Oh, it felt fabulous. You know, obviously, there was still a special connection, and I think that's what I felt mostly, was that we still had a special connection. I think that's about the best way that I can describe it. So there was no more of that, you know, her battling, because, you know, she wanted to have control as well. You know, everybody wants to feel that they're in control of their life, even through the dementia. And so it was such a relief, and no matter what she said, I just went with the flow. So, you know, if she said, you know, I was visiting her one time after we had moved her up to North Carolina. She and I were, she was at the memory care where we, that my brother and I chose, and she and I were sitting in the activity room, and they were doing exercises. And she had introduced me as her daughter, actually, as we were going into the room to one of the caregivers. And we went in, and we did a couple of exercises, and then they were taking a little break. And she looked over at me, and she said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, I came to visit you." And she said, "Oh, that's nice." And she said, "Where do you live?" And I said, "I live in California." She said, "Really?" She said, "My daughter lives in California." And I just, it, you know, those times are hard.
Yeah.
And yet it was, at the time, so easy for me to say, "Really? Well, you know, that's really great." And she smiled, you know, she goes, "Yeah, I think that's pretty neat, you know." And we went along and we did our exercises, and then at the end it was time for lunch, and I went in and we're sitting there having lunch. And then, again, you know, talk about the cheese, you know, we're back in the Swiss cheese. She looked over at one of her table mates that, you know, they always ate together. And she said, "Oh, have you met my daughter? My daughter's here visiting from California."
It's so insidious. You know, it just comes and goes, and it's in and it's out. And that is, like we talked about at the very beginning of the show, that's so confusing to family members. And you're absolutely right. They will call me and say, "Oh, Mom's much better." And I'll say, "Oh, no, 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 no." It's in the moment. We have to stay in the moment. I always say we have to stay calm, confident, patient, and present with them in the moment, and we never know if we're going to get cheese or a hole, do we?
Oh, gosh, never, never. And, you know, and then sometimes she'd look at me and she'd say, you know, "Have you seen Mom and Dad recently? You know, how are they doing?" And I, you know, and as time went on, I found it so easy to just calmly say, "Oh, yeah, they're fine. You know, they send their love. They think about you all the time. They're fine." And, again, that made her happy. It made her feel safe. It continued our connection, and I didn't for a moment think I was lying.
No, because they are. They are happy and fine. It's just
they
that
are.
They're not happy and fine present with us in this very moment. And so that is just simply too much information for someone to process with that broken thinker. And everything about dementia care has to be transformed. Every single way we communicate, the proactive way we're going to provide care, you know, within the environment, when it comes to medical care, we need to transform that connection. Everything has to change. And we were talking earlier about how difficult it is to become your parent's parent. But we can't even parent the way that they taught us, because they taught us by parenting that they were allowing us to become the person that we were going to be and to learn to process information, cope with stresses, deal with just basically life. And they did that in a great way because they got us to where we are. But when you are providing care to somebody with dementia, you have to do all of that for them more and more. Instead of teaching them to cope, instead of helping them to process, you simply have to think for them and do it for them, because they're losing the ability to do it. They're unlearning all of that. And so we don't even have a mentor or an example that we can use, because parenting a child is so much different than caring for somebody with dementia. It's like the opposite. So
it's so true.
Learning day by day. The learning curve is so immense. And often families will ask me, "Well, how do I do this with Mom?" And I say, "Well, we're just going to have to learn as we go. Because I can tell you what works for Mrs. Smith, but it might not work for Mrs. Jones. We have to do everything so customized." And constantly when I'm doing training, family members will say, "What do I do in this situation?" I'll say, "Well, try this, this, and this. And if that doesn't work, we'll have to figure out something else." There's no upset if A happens, we do B. It just doesn't work that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's no cookbook. You can just cook it up.
No way. There's no cookie cutter dementia care that works. That's what makes it so hard in the communities, because they're dealing with 15, 20, maybe 30 folks that have different causes of dementia, different dementia symptoms. It's all individualized. And each and every one of those care staff, leaders, program directors, everyone has to learn their own individual dementia approach in order for it to work, and it'll change in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. And I do want to quickly just say, you mentioned the medical community, and I tell you, Laura, I wish every physician had a copy of your book and could attend one of your seminars. And I know we're probably getting a little short on time, but I just want to share quickly, when I first realized that my mother was exhibiting some dementia symptoms, I made an appointment with a neurologist in South Florida where she lived, and we went in to see the neurologist, and he gave her the mini mental, and she aced it. And I will just say that their office, even though I told them not to contact her, to only contact me, they called to remind her of the appointment. And then she realized that I was taking her to a neurologist, and of course she was upset and didn't want to go and said, you know, I'm not crazy, why are you taking me to a neurologist, and I won't go. And I said, well, I've made the appointment, they're going to charge us anyway, so I'm going, and either you can go with me or not. And I said, but ride along with me, because when we leave, we're going to go to lunch and go shopping. So she was okay. So that enticed her to actually get in the car and go. So sitting there in the office, and the doctor gave her the mini mental, and she aced it. She decorated her clock, and she had a conversation with him about every question. She remembered the words, and I did not. And then, of course, at the end, the physician looks at me as if I'm the one with the problem, and he thinks she's
right.
Fine. So she went out to the waiting room, and I went back into his office, and he said, you know, I think she's fine. This is just normal aging. And I said, no, this is my mother. I know her. This is not normal aging. And he didn't seem to think that there was anything wrong. So I, in my mind, thought, okay, well, I'm going to find another neurologist right away. And I went out to the waiting room and got her, and we left, and we're in the elevator going down. The office was on the second floor. We're going down, and she looks at me, and she says, where are we going? And I said, oh, we're going to go to lunch and go shopping. And she said, oh, we don't have to go see that doctor, do we? And I said, no, we don't have to.
Yeah.
I felt
Just,
you know, I thought, boy, I wish he could be in this elevator with us. Yeah.
And you know, we don't want to throw the medical profession under the bus, because...
Oh, no, they're excellent.
They don't have anything to give us when it comes to dementia.
They don't know what they don't know.
That's
exactly
right. And so, you know, and they see, like you're talking about, and that was a wonderful detailed description of what happens in the doctor's office, because they see just those few minutes, and she's hitting cheese all over the place. They don't see that whole, because they can often rally just for those few minutes. And they have that great hostess facade that we all have when we're out in public. We can do a really great job. And so, you know, they rally. They show that what cheese they have. And that doctor, you know, how long is that office visit? They don't see that. What I want to encourage physicians to do is to listen to the caregiver. Wouldn't it have been great if that physician would have listened to your account of what really is happening and take that into much more of an account?
Yes. Yeah, what are the things she's doing that's really concerns you? What are the patterns that have not been in the past that have been there her whole life that are not there? But see, he doesn't have the education in dementia as a neurologist, unfortunately, to recognize. He might be the best neurologist on the planet, but if he doesn't know and study dementia, then he doesn't know dementia, does he?
No, it's that dementia awareness that is above and beyond that clinical knowledge. That I have to give it to those neurologists. They certainly have much more clinical knowledge than me, but they need that dementia awareness. And we are out of time. It is crazy, Pamela. Thank you for coming. We need to have you back again because we have just barely touched just the tip of the iceberg with all of your wonderful knowledge and the way you share. It's so personal and touching and heartwarming, and I am just so honored to be your friend and to have you on with us today. I want to end with a caregiver quote like I always do. I want to tell you that not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. And it's quite obvious that Pamela did that with her mother, and she is just a wonderful, warm, and caring friend. I am very honored to have you in my life. And Scott, same for you. Thank you so much, and
thanks
for being with me today.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Pamela. We'll be back with more Live with the Dementia Whisperer, and check out the great shows that are in the archives here at Blog Talk Radio. There are now many, many there on many different aspects, many different agencies, services, level of dementia awareness, and that's what we're here to do, to raise you up and to lift you up in your dementia awareness so that you can travel that journey with eyes open instead of eyes shut. This is co-host Scott Cluthie. Have a great evening, everybody, and stay tuned always for more of Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman.
You've been listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, featuring Laura Wayman. Get your copy of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care and connect with Laura at laurawayman.com and join the Dementia Whisperer's newsletter. Send email questions, ideas, and comments to help@laurawayman.com. And join Laura Wayman on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. This is Scott Cluthie, co-host and executive producer. Join us next time for Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman.